Welcome to the Best of Seven, presented by The Big Lead. I'm Kyle Koster. I'm here with Stephen Douglas. We're coming to you live on tape delay after an episode that started out at 10, stayed at 10, hit 11 at some points. To me, one of the most memorable of the entire series. Start to finish, a thrill ride. A lot happened, a lot of surprising stuff. There was a lot of Easter eggs for fans of the show. If you wanted a dive into the mind of Kendall Roy, and don't we all, isn't that something we're all looking for more of in our everyday lives? This was it, titled Too Much Birthday, after the late, great Berenstain Bears, a Mandela effect topic. From the very first image last night of Kendall singing a song, a heartfelt song, at soundcheck, his girlfriend watching him. I know you tweeted out the picture before the episode even aired. I know that that spoke directly to you, but it really set the tone to answering the question, what would the douchiest 40th birthday of all time look like? And let me tell you, they nailed it. Kendall had high hopes going in. All of them were dashed, his expectations ruined. Leaves once again at rock bottom, and he keeps setting a new standard for rock bottom as this season goes on. Stephen, I'm just going to clear out and let you wax poetic, if you will, about what this episode did for you from start to finish.
Yeah, it was a very strong episode. Another bottle episode, kind of, where they didn't advance a lot of much. They didn't really deal with, they only dealt with a little bit of the succession, but it was mostly, you know, just about how broken our boy is. He had guests come. He wanted guests to take off their jackets and leave their cell phones because he wanted the gift to be their presence, which, you know, it's always nice. I don't know. It was just wild, and the gloves were off, and everybody was it's a party. Everybody should be happy, but everybody was absolutely miserable. They were angry at each other. Just a lot going on. To quote our boy Kendall Roy, it was all bangers all the time.
Yeah, he was very specific about the playlist, and he was very specific that he didn't want it to feel like an asshole's birthday, but it felt very specifically like an asshole's birthday party. So what we're going to do, as we've been doing all season, is ranking the seven most powerful figures, the people or entities that really stood out, as we tried to figure out who is the most likely to succeed. And like you said, there was very little in terms of power brokering. A lot of the last few weeks have been spent in one room, basically having kind of like a Sorkin-like conversation. This was all action. This was a real treat. Like you said, kind of a bottle episode. If you stayed and watched the final scenes, basically they had Jeremy Strong talking about how this episode allowed him to do every single thing that he loves to do as Kendall, go to all those places, hit all those notes. If this doesn't win an Emmy, I will be shocked. I mean, we can make the argument that Kieran Culkin might deserve an Emmy for this one as well. Spectacular featured hour for both of those people. But I think that we jump right in, and I was listening to another Succession podcast that made the point that, you know, a lot of the previous week's big revelations and feelings get pushed aside and glossed over as you jump in. Like, at number seven on our list is Gojo. And as the episode started, I think it was probably like, it took me until maybe the third reference of Gojo for it to click, like, what are they talking about? Did I miss something? It kind of came out of nowhere, but maybe it doesn't really matter what Gojo is and what Gojo does. We're meant to understand that it's some sort of app, some sort of new internet entity that is spearheaded and controlled by Alexander Skarsgård, who plays a bad dude looking for a bad dude. He gets hooked up with a bad dude through Roman Roy. But Gojo is basically looking to be purchased by Waystar, even though some would argue that it should be the other way around. And it seems like Gojo and Skarsgård have ultimate leverage to dictate the terms of the deal. And you see that through his negotiation, through his general demeanor, he's going to say anything that he wants to. And he's not going to worry about people's feelings. And ultimately, it ends up with him brokering a deal in a very cocaine-y way, in a very meatpacking district way, that's going to allow him a firewall so he doesn't have to deal with Logan Roy as he sits down and counts the days for his hopefully imminent death. Gojo, big deal, big moves. It's the future of the company. And when you tie it together with the 1-2 step that Roman and Logan did in offering Kendall a buyout of his shares and his options disguised as a birthday card, I think that you really see what direction Waystar is going to go. And Gojo is basically going to be the amplification method for the right wing brand of nonsense that they're going to try to commercialize. And that is ultimately probably going to push Shiv past her breaking point, which I think we almost got really close to reaching. So a lot there. Why don't you take it on Gojo? Talk about why it was such a revelation and why Skarsgård is going to be a promising new figure to learn about.
Yeah, Gojo is just this catch-all internet, whatever 0.0 we're on thing. It's a streaming platform, but also gets them into sports betting somehow, it was mentioned. It's going to replace the technology that Waystar has, which is garbage worth peeing on, which won't even load when it's being urinated on in a toilet. So, I mean, if you can't stream something while you're streaming there, what's the point? Skarsgård was just not just a miserable person. You know, it's like, what's the point of being rich and successful if you're going to go to this? I mean, all these people are just miserable at this party. The only people who are having any fun, presumably, are the guests who even Tom said, no, it doesn't look like they're having any fun. But yeah, Gojo, it was definitely something that has probably been mentioned previously, like in passing, as just like this catch-all for whatever they need to do to get into, to get out of just print. Gojo, you know, Skarsgård did the power play by sending his CFO or whatever, which Logan hated, and cut the meeting short. You know, it seems like it's a big fish. And Waystar really needs them. So, they're, you know, good for them, you know. Some more people to, you know, put the screws to Logan Roy and show him that, you know, the guard is changing.
Yeah, and I think that this deal gets done because of Roman's unique ability to connect with the sociopaths and the psychos out there on a human level, because he has a lot of common ground with them. And I think that as we see Waystar getting more desperate, Logan seeing the, you know, kind of the limitations of his omnipresent power, I think that the introduction of Skarsgård and Gojo is like, they're making choices that they think that they need to make, but they're making some deals with some really bad people. And they're being really short-sighted, and not just bad for like society in general, because that's kind of always what they've been doing is poisoning the pool and making it a worse existence for most of the people who use their products. I think that they're getting in bed with people who are ultimately going to have no problem turning on them. Logan was very mad that he couldn't meet with Skarsgård, the Gojo CEO. Skarsgård said tech is not his world, despite owning a streaming service. Classic tech guy move. But honestly, these two wouldn't like each other to begin with. And obviously, the relationship would get off to a bad start if Logan was asked to procure some documents showing that what his resting heart rate was. So I think that ultimately this is elevating Roman, and you're going to see in the rankings as we go on, he took a meteoric rise this week. But I think that long-term, it might not be the smartest strategy for the two Roys who are most willing to dabble and play footsie with these type of people to do that as opposed to more legacy deals with some people who operate in the parameters of basic human decency. Is that your read on it as well?
Yeah, it's kind of weird how the stakes of the online proponent have been raised so much. Like from the first season, it's like, we need to acquire Valter, you know, which we kind of seem like that was just like an online media site. And now it's like, oh, well, we need basically to procure Hulu or Netflix. And these are, it's just, Roman wasn't really able to connect with the Valter guy quite as well, just because he was an a-hole, but he wasn't like evil. Mm-hmm. He was just a jerk. And just when the Roys have this uncanny ability to just attract the worst people in the world and, you know, really hit it off. And Roman just, he's found his people, these rich, powerful assholes. And, you know, great for him and great for Gojo.
Yes, Gojo stock is rising. Also rising stock, Connor Roy, back from the dead. My man wore a coat all night, even though he was asked explicitly not to. He's nursing a rotator cuff injury, Alan Ruck, in real life at the time that this was filmed. Oh. But in the show, they wrote that he had injured himself celebrating some great polling numbers, which we learned was inching closer to 1%. And now in his mind, he thinks that maybe Bezos or Soros or someone is going to come begging for him to sway the election one way or another. And I think that those remain pipe dreams that aren't going to come to manifestation. But I thought that the most interesting thing is that Connor was not the butt of the joke this episode. He had agency, and most importantly, he had a supportive partner in Willa, who seemed for the first time ever to be attracted to him, standing up for him. She was engaged in the party. She loved the looking at the lights. Like, she was there. Like, it was a total 180 of her personality. And I don't really know what that's about, but I love when Connor's having a good time because he is the least evil of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Never really goes out of his way to screw over his siblings. So it's just great to see his stock on the rise. Do you think that they're laying the groundwork for him being a viable contender in the presidential race? Or do you think that this was just a short reprieve from being on the bench of irrelevance?
Well, I mean, as we've learned from real life, stranger things can happen. So who knows what they want to do with Connor. But he's got the support of, you know, small sample size, but, you know, if you extrapolate, he's got 4 million con heads just waiting to do his bidding, with Panhandle Pete right at the top of the list. And maybe it's Connor actually getting a little bit of real power, trying to throw his hat in the ring, both politically and get serious at Waystar with like TV show or whatever. But like, maybe that, with the fact that he's kind of seems like the most, you know, it's that sliding scale. It's like, well, you know, he's the most decent Roy child, which, you know, it's like being the tallest giant. I don't even know how to describe it, but maybe, you know, just being nice to Will and being more human-like with her, combined with him taking agency and becoming bigger and a little more powerful and showing some ambition, maybe, you know, he's worn her down, and, you know, she's starting to have some real affection for him. So when a small woman is telling him to take off his jacket and he doesn't want to take off his jacket, you know, she can get the hell out of there, because, I mean, this is the head of the con heads, and he is a serious person, and if he doesn't want to take off his damn jacket, he's going to wear his damn jacket. So, yeah, it was nice to see Connor feeling good, and for him, and for us to see him, like, recognizing what's going on with Willa, instead of us just seeing Willa doing this. Like, you could see the affection is in his eyes, as you know, and I didn't know about the real accident. I was kind of confused about that, but you know, I'm glad they were able to work around it and he didn't have to do any stunt work this week.
Yeah, they're going to put him on an innings limit next year and try to reduce his slider usage, which is very smart work. Steve Cohen is on it. Number five, new face on our rankings and actual name of a human being on this show is Comfrey. Now, Comfrey is Kendall's PR assistant / do everything assistant. We got to see behind the scenes of what her day-to-day is. The hell that is this job, that she has this job because she needs one, not that she's a true believer or a zealot. She knows that Kendall is totally out of control, totally full of it. She recognizes the absurdity of each and every single thing, but largely I think that the show presented her as being very competent. She was able to execute the ideas that Kendall asked her to execute, no matter how unreasonable. She found a way to say no to him or to get him to say no in terms of becoming a crucified Billy Joel or whatever was going to happen at the end. And then we had the B storyline of Greg pursuing her romantically and her not particularly being interested with his game, which was shockingly bad. I guess we never really seen Greg actually try to engage in romantic conversation, but it's poor. Poor to quite poor. But she does change her tune. Maybe there was some interest. He is a tall drink of water, but she finds out that Kendall has essentially forbade Greg from asking. And therefore she's like, well, maybe I'm going to stick it to him. Who knows what the motivations are, but I thought it was a really good episode building out the depth of this character. And nothing was more human than her sharing with Greg that she had an apartment full of 80s lunchboxes that Kendall made her procure and then decided not to use. But if she's going to sell them on her own time, then the company is going to need detailed receipts.
Yeah. Kendall, he's a very big picture guy, but he's very into the details. You would think once the, how much could she have possibly spent on these lunchboxes? Like $1,000. And he's got, I mean, this is like a couple million dollar party, I have to assume. And he's like, well, I'm going to need receipts turned into HR for, you know, these seven lunchboxes that kind of look similar to ones I had when I was a child. I also can't picture the Roy children carrying lunchboxes to their private schools, but you know, that's a topic for another day. Comfrey, just who saw this coming, you know? First actually having to learn her name, and learn her name is Comfrey, which is hilarious. Don't know if it's first name or last name. Saying yes to Greg, she, you know, as a professional, she showed no interest before. To his ham-fisted hellos and whatnot. But, you know, it was just sort of hearing that Kendall didn't want her to, definitely pushed her into being aggressive and being like, yeah, ask me out. You know, definitely a stay away from him. Like that episode of Seinfeld with George and the girl. Like, oh, he's bad.
You're a bad boy.
Yeah, he's a bad boy. You know, Greg's a bad boy, so stay away from him. Well, no, that's just going to push him into his gangly arms.
Yeah, and, you know, fun to watch and kind of a diversion, but I do think that it will have some bearing on the ultimate plot because we saw that she told Greg that she's glad that she ran into him earlier in the show because she might have to brief the press against him. And she said she could do her best to keep it targeted, which was a small concession. But I think that she knows the secrets about what's going on with Kendall. She understands Kendall's strategy. Kendall still seems like the only play he has is to pick on someone weaker than him. And that, in this case, it's Greg. He was the meanest and the cruelest to Greg. That was really hard to watch. And it was really hard to watch Greg just take that beating when those really personal things like go find a new family to suckle off of or whatever the wording was. But I do think that weakens Kendall further because Comfrey, if she does develop feelings, she seems like she's kind of at her wit's end already. And then you know that the next person that Kendall is going to get, and we've seen this being a recurring theme, most notably with his legal representation, the next person he's going to get is going to be less competent, trying to execute worst ideas.
Yeah, it's just a shame that isn't that the way the show is built, we're not going to get to see like Greg and Comfrey, you know, go out on a couple of dates and, you know, see how things go, because that's not Succession. But, you know, it's fun to think of that spinoff where we do get to see Greg, you know, opening a door and awkwardly pulling out a chair. But Comfrey, I'm happy for her. I hope things work out with her and Greg, even though, you know, we'll probably never see her again, except in being mentioned.
Things worked out well for our number four character, and that's Tom. Tom gets the great news that there will be nothing custodial in this deal that's going to be reached with DOJ, which I got to say, it doesn't sound like the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. So I don't know if we're talking about a premature celebration. He gets the news. He remains calm. All-time scene in which he goes into Greg's office, asks him to scoot over a little bit, buddy, and then upends the desk like Jesus at the temple in a fit of rage. Fantastic watching Greg play off that. Tom is so happy and he's so thrilled. At the beginning, we actually get a peek at these prison blogs, which was a great little nugget. We got to see that what he was looking at. Raybrook, I think, is the one that he was considering. You see the way the facility was diagrammed. But I think that it shows that he's not working with the feds, because this was genuinely good news to him.
Mm-hmm.
Logan squeezes his arm and says, "I'll remember." So essentially, if this deal is legit and he's not going to jail, he gets all the positives without the very obvious negative of being incarcerated. And he should be riding high. He should be having a great time. I think that we're both a little bit worried that some sort of snafu will come up that is going to turn that smile into an upside down frown. But he does not have a good time at the party. He takes the wrong drugs in the wrong order and he can't get happy. We've all been there. Shiv is dancing by herself. What do we make of Tom's pure elation and then dour sadness? It's almost like he realized, yes, he's not going to go to jail, but his current situation sucks in a lot of ways because he's in a loveless marriage. He's curried the most favor he can ever hope to curry, but there's a cap on that. He's never going to be the man. Thoughts on Tom? Did you celebrate with him? Did you feel his emotion? And do you think there should have been an unsportsmanlike penalty on the play?
The flipping over the desk, did not see coming. You know, I was expecting, you know, going big hug or something, but then there's this animal energy deep down inside Tom. And he's been beaten down, and, you know, it was just so exciting. And he had to hold it in again when he heard there was going to be nothing custodial. But again, you wonder, is this for certain? What if the Roys aren't able to place the proper president in charge? But for now, good for him. But then immediately at the party, he was the one to point out that, like I said, that everybody else didn't look like they were having a great time. It's Kendall's, the party was totally Kendall's energy, you know, just over the top and big, but also deep down, just very dark and disturbed and unhappy. And I think it showed for all the guests, and then it led to a bad trip for Tom, who then went and, you know, kind of turned on Greg, and he got upset in the Hall of Compliments, you know, which you never see. You never see someone upset in the Hall of Compliments.
He was acting like someone who is not very full of grace.
That was the wrong compliment. Absolutely a bad read by that guy, even though he was just doing his job, as Greg pointed out. But, you know, he was not full of grace. So if you're not full of grace, you have a bad time in the tunnel of compliments. And so, yeah, Tom's kind of stuck in his own little prison, his own free prison. And I think he's probably done a lot of reflecting over the last whatever the period is where it looked like he was going to jail. So, you know, now he sees kind of how everything is, and he's a little jealous of Greg being in this spot where he's excited about this new girl, you know, it's like he kind of has his life ahead of him. Tom's is where he is, which seems like maybe it's not where he ended up really wanted to be, even though he thought it was.
Yeah. Tom wants to go out, but his wife wants to go home and go to bed. And we all know the disappointment of wanting the night to continue, but just kind of having the window close on you. And it's another night of sports highlights in bed for Tom. Number three is Greg. Now, we have spoken pretty extensively about Greg, so we can keep it pretty succinct here. Just strategically, why was this such a good episode for Greg? Obviously, we have the Tom news. We have him currying favor with Comfrey, which we've both noticed. What do you think is going to be next for Greg, though, as it relates to the power playing?
Well, as usual, who knows what Tom's real ceiling is here? You know, because he's not one of the kids. He's kind of played both sides. He's survived, it seems, so far. But maybe Kendall could still turn on Greg, which he, you know, he's threatened to do. You know, he's like, I'm kidding, or am I? You know, being the total Kendall that he is. Good for Greg. You know, it seems like he's out of the woods and into the Hall of Compliments. But, you know, it will remain to be seen. You know, if Tom isn't able to snap out of his little funk here, you know, where is Greg going to go for advice on dating a classy lady in the big city? You know, these are the things we are going to have to worry about in addition to acquiring Gojo and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm just curious about Greg's past romantic history. I would love like a wiki on that. It could be one of any number of things with my man. I think we were both surprised to see that maybe he's not as skilled in that area as we might have expected. But then again, he's like 6'7" and funny, so he's probably done just fine despite himself.
But on the other hand, this was a man who 3 years ago was a mascot at a theme park. So, you know, it's not like he was working the tilt-a-whirl where, you know, all the ladies got to check him out and get to know him. He was playing a character.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes throwing up in it, which can be a repellent. Number two, we are so excited about this one. Adult birthdays. I think that this is the best adult birthday I've ever seen on television. When this idea was hatched, I can't imagine the excitement of everybody involved in coming up with the decor, the art installations. Everything was absolutely amazing. Coming through, being birthed into the world, that heavy-handedness, the fake newspapers made me laugh out loud and like howl with delight to the point of Connor getting his taken down. He's like, let's take the Connor down. Connor, it's a joke. Just absolutely amazing. Like a treehouse drawing on that Berenstain Bears vibe again, an exclusive area inside an exclusive area. The performance, which never came to fruition, which would have been absolutely amazing seeing him fly through the air. Everything was just so Kendall. And I think you said it earlier that like over the top, thinks there's some art behind it. There's a line in The Office where Oscar says the analytical part of me wants to blah, 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 or study the art. But I know that deep down there's nothing to it. Like, I think trying to deduce exactly the themes and what's going on editorially inside that mind is a losing proposition. It's a mess. It's going in so many different directions. I can't even imagine the type of people who would come to this. It seems like an asshole's birthday party specifically for other assholes. Like, it just doesn't even make sense. Like, I can't imagine wanting to go to this outside of watching the train wreck vibe of it. And let me tell you, train wreck happened. The man left his own birthday, punted on the entire experience, as is his wont to do this season, tore up all his presents in the only human moment of the hour, looking for the thing that the kids made him, and just is down very, very bad. Tough to watch, but I'll tell you what, just a really good reason not to throw yourself a 40th birthday party.
Yeah, this is our excuse to really talk about Kendall, because he obviously could not make the power rankings with this lifestyle. You mentioned like the only human moment was him tearing through the presents, but I would argue it's Kendall trying to prove he's a human, you know, and
right.
Just like, well, this is the most important thing to me. Like, he cares at all about whatever his kids made. And he's a total monster, and just, he's so pathetic and sympathetic and bad all at the same time. It's just, I mean, we say it every week, it's just such a great performance. There are just so many layers. I mean, I'd have to ask like my wife or someone who has a background in art. It seems like Kendall is the perfect example of someone who has seen a lot of art, but doesn't understand what makes it art. You know, there's no heart, there's no theory, there's nothing behind it. It's just like, yeah, I'm singing Billy Joel, I'm in a tuxedo on a cross, and I'm flying above the room. It's like, that's not art, you know. That's not something that a lot of thought and theory has gone into.
Well, he just doesn't believe it, you know. Yeah. Like he's half-hearted in all of it. Like if he really wanted to do the performance, he would have done the performance. He's doing it for other people. I thought that there are elements of like, look, he thinks that he's Andy Warhol, you know. He thinks that he's the coolest person in every sect, right? So you saw him like, oh, we'll do like the tiny Wu-Tang thing or whatever, you know, like,
yeah,
he thinks he can parachute into any type of situation in real life and be the coolest guy in the room. And he also thinks he can parachute into any artistic medium and be as competent as the people who have actual passion and have made it their life's work. And it's so painfully obvious that what he's doing is transactional and will be lost in the next hit of whatever drug he's doing.
Well, I was thinking about, well, first it's like back in, I think the first season when, you know, he put on the shoes, the mm-hmm. special sneakers to go and meet the artist. Like,
yeah, he tries to be he tries to
there's nothing there.
Be a chameleon, you know, like.
But, you know, adult birthday parties, there's just so much going on here. And he just, it was actually impressive that it was apparently across the street from his apartment where he could look down on it. But yeah, he's just a bad guy, bad dude.
Yeah, he is. And you know, you root for him because you do see how much he's hurt and how much he's been a hurt individual. And I think that you have a heart for that element of him, but it's just a constant loop of him spoiling any type of goodwill or humanity that's shown his way. He is not coming. I think he's approaching the point, and this will be the last thing on this, but I think he's approaching the point where he can't come back from a lot of the stuff that he's doing. Like it's the point of the show is like, they give themselves a hard time. None of it is serious. But what we've seen recently is that things are getting really serious, from the business element of getting in bed with some really bad people who are going to do some disastrous things, to the siblings saying and doing things to each other that can't just be taken back with some bullshitting at the next get together.
Yes. And we'll get to that with number one, which is Roman Roy, I think, for the first time.
And let me tell you, the man earned it. Kieran Culkin, the performance was fantastic. The dude is incredible. Like, there's this thing about him where he's so slimy, but you like him a little bit. You respect him a little bit. he does have enough humanity when he's paired against the Gojos of the world, where he's saying, yeah, I mean, we're all rooting for my dad to die. You know, he's not, you know, he actually cares about his dad. He actually cares about Kendall in a way I think that Shiv doesn't. I don't think that he really knew the way that the offer for the buyout would be perceived. So some real serious stuff with him. He's basically become the number two behind Logan. They've cooked out two separate deals, the buyout and the Gojo, while sidelining Shiv. He is a signature on a piece of paper, which it's pretty important for people to know who owns and who is running the company, despite however you want to downplay it. And in consecutive episodes, he's been able to sweet talk basically just the fringe Redditor 4chans of the world to get on their level, to get inside their world and try to build a future one together. He was sidelined for the first half of this season, and it's almost like, I don't know if he's a true zealot in that he believes the things that he's doing, or he's ultimately decided that I'm going to be sidelined if we try to do it the old school way. So I'm just going to try to do it the new school way and color outside the lines and kind of use my specific skill set of not asking for any type of permission and just trying to like bank on Logan appreciating that the agency and the action will be rewarded, because Logan ultimately sees a lot of himself, I believe, in what Roman is doing, whereas he used to see a lot of himself in Kendall. That's all in the background.
Yeah, Kendall's issues have just washed away any true capabilities or Logan-ness that existed. And Kendall's, Roman is, he sees the future, and he's just trying to influence everything to stay with the company, stay with the family, which his father likes. But he's also, you know, kind of putting his own flavor on it by getting these bad people to come over to Waystar. And yeah, and then you get to see just how vindictive and mean he can be with both Shiv and Kendall, you know, shoving Kendall at the birthday party. Just the way he gets whatever he wants, it seems, most of the time, and just goes and gets the bracelet and gets into the treehouse, which, you know, what a breach of trust to enter a treehouse you're not supposed to enter. But, you know, that's the kind of guy that Roman is.
I guess as we try to close here and extrapolate what's going to come next, I think that Roman's actions actually could be a boon for Kendall, because Shiv, who's not on our list because she keeps eating piles of garbage and has been forced to eat the trash for some time now, she's totally disillusioned with everything that's going on. You saw the way that she reacted when she found out that, yes, actually Waystar is spying on Rava to see how much Kendall visits his children. She correctly points out that that's kind of beyond the pale. And I think that Roman is doing this in her face. He's sticking it to her. He's doing that intentionally because he gets off on all that weird stuff. I think that he could eventually drive her to team up with Kendall. And ultimately, we're going to have those two. We're going to have one guy who doesn't get it and doesn't have it together, someone who very much has it together, who can maybe handle the details, and Shiv versus Roman and Logan, who are going to be two birds of a feather, only looking at the bottom line, not playing by any type of rule book. And I think the only thing that we're assured is someone's going to get very, very, very hurt.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised when Roman revealed that he was in on the buyout. That was kind of out of nowhere. It seemed like, you know, Logan just had the birthday card, which, God, what a awesomely horrible, shitty way to give somebody that news in a birthday card where it crossed out happy birthday.
Yeah, you couldn't even leave the happy birthday. You needed to explicitly say, "I do not wish you a happy birthday."
It seemed there that he was like the messenger boy, but then after Kendall saw it, he revealed that, you know, this is something that Dad and I came up with, and I wasn't really sure if that was true at first, or if it was just something he was telling Shiv to, like, you know, try and make her crack. But I mean, either way, it worked. And yeah, Shiv definitely she seems like she's ready to jump teams.
Yeah, we could have gone forever on this episode. I think that it's one of my favorite. It was so intense. Mm-hmm. For a full hour. It set up a lot of things and it had so much to look at. This set piece, we were just lamenting, I feel like it was last week, that too much of the action was happening in these staid, boring rooms. We got an explosion of color and life. And it looks like on the coming episode, they will be taking a trip to England for their mother's wedding, I assume is what it is. So we're going to get out of New York. We're going to play in some new spaces. But this show, the moment you start to feel the momentum's kind of coming out of it and you're like, okay, well, how are they going to land it? They hit you over the face with a spectacular hour like they did last night.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Kendall kind of returning to the scene of the crime, as it were. I guess I don't know if we've ever met the mom's boyfriend, future husband. I'm sure that's going to have, you know, we're going to have lots of awkward introductions, and Logan's going to do the I'm invited, but I'm not coming, but then I come. And I mean, I'm sure every single character will do that, but they'll all end up there together and just one big miserable family that we love to, you know, be made to feel awkward by.
We will be doing our power rankings 3 more times. I can't believe it's coming to a close. Our time is limited. Keep refreshing feverishly, thebiglead.com. Check out my podcast, The Kyle Coster Show. Press Pass with Liam McCune. Best of 7, we'll have NFL picks tomorrow with myself and Liam. We appreciate you listening. And honesty.